Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Yoga Tribe, namaste. This is Alec Vishal Rubin here to welcome you to the Yoga Revealed podcast. I'm feeling magical and full of excitement to share with you Mary Claire Sweet. MC is the fearless leader of the Lotus House of Yoga, my yoga exchange in the Rock for the Vibe tribe. Her dharma is clearly revealed in this lifetime to illuminate the love in each of our hearts, bringing us closer to ourselves and more connected to each other.
My homie who wrote this, 1,500 years ago, was going through the same shit that you are. So, we are not that different. As humans, we're dealing with the same stuff over and over. And that brings a sense of unity to the entire human experience that is revealed through these ancient scriptures.
Get ready for a journey into the heart of the fire with MC Sweet on this episode of the Yoga Revealed Podcast. Namaste, and thank you for tuning in to Yoga Revealed Podcast. This is Alec, and hope you're having an amazing day. And Yoga Revealed is so excited to announce that we just hit 15,000 downloads. And we couldn't do that without you, our Yoga Revealers, those who are tuning in to the interviews and the people that we are illuminating and taking the wisdom that is being transmitted and sharing that with your community. So thank you so much for tuning in today. I sit across from the one and only, the vibrant and the incredibly abundant Mary Claire Sweet, also known as Miss MC.
Yo, what up, Alec?
Thank you so much, Mary Claire, for joining me in my house in Boulder, Colorado, and revealing to us what yoga is as it's found in your heart.
Yes, that's exactly where it is. And I'm so happy to share space with you. I love your house. I might move in.
I love it. Yes. So, MC, we love to start the podcast off with who you are for those who maybe don't know who you are and how yoga was found to you. A little synopsis.
Yes, I would love to share that. Well, I enjoy a really heart-led life, and I think that's the summation of everything I've walked through thus far. So I grew up in Lincoln, Nebraska, and I had a very magical upbringing. My parents loved food and music and culture and art. They loved taking us outside, and we, as little girls, my little sisters and I would find fairy circles, and we'd pretend like we were whisked away to India, or we'd be in Africa exploring. You know, we had these tremendous imaginations and just really magical little childhood, you know. And even though we were in the middle of the country in Lincoln, Nebraska, my parents made sure that, you know, we were very cultured, even down to when we were little kids. My parents fed us Japanese cake, which was tofu, And I mean, I thought that was just what Japanese cake was, you know? And so it was like, we eat, you know, tofu with soy sauce on it. My parents were friends with lots of chefs. And so like there was one Indian restaurant in Lincoln, Nebraska when I was growing up, and my little sisters and I would like stand outside the kitchen and, you know, watch the grandmother make naan and use the deep ovens. And so I grew up in a way where nothing was really off limits, you know, and my parents practiced Tai Chi and my mom practiced yoga. My dad always had like was getting body work done. And so connecting the physical body with the energetic body made total sense to me. Because of that like foundation, I expressed myself as a dancer. I danced since I was 3 years old. And when I would go to dance camps or, you know, go to like dance workshops, there was always kind of like a token yoga class. My mom and grandmother grew up watching Lilias Fullan on PBS. And I tell you this because I think a lot of people in our culture today come to the yoga mat as like, I don't know what this is. Like, what are we exactly doing here? And for me, yoga was just always like, okay, something additional that I do to, for my dancing. And we traveled a lot growing up. We came to Estes Park, Colorado every year of my life. I mean, sometimes several times a year. And there's a bookstore called McDonald's Books in Estes Park. And there, when I was 12, I got a book about yoga. It was like probably made by Gaiam or something. You know, I mean, it wasn't like, you know, the mirror of yoga. I wish it was. But that my journal from that year is like an annotation of the book. So it's like you can look back through this journal and I've like written out all the chakras and like I had written out the eight limbs and just was like, okay, this is my spiritual practice. Now, meanwhile, I grew up in the Catholic faith and my parents were very much like new wave hippies. So it was like, we do this, but also, you know, you can have sex with whomever you're in love with for the first time. And like, you know, yeah, there's no sin. Like, that's not real. But because I grew up in a faith where we were, you know, worshiping the Mother Mary and other saints, when I came to my yoga practice as an older person, like connecting with the deities just was very easy. And all of these little things, little, you know, moments that I walked through in my upbringing really brought me to a place where in college, I was in a very self-destructive phase. You know, I look back now and I was trying to fit in and conform. And I did that through drug abuse, through alcohol abuse. I mean, I didn't sleep. I didn't eat well. Like it was like 4 years of my life where I was trying to kill myself as, you know, swiftly as I could or test my invincibility, which I think, you know, a lot of young people kind of go through, but I always like had my yoga practice. So sometimes I would have, you know, been up on like a drug binge for a couple of days and still like, you know, oh, the birds are singing, the sun's out, like I should roll my mat out and do some sun salutations, you know? So it was kind of like, you know, sometimes I think like, why isn't the yoga working? And it's like the yoga was working overtime to keep you alive, you know? So through, you know, the support of my family, first and foremost, and, you know, one of my best friends at the time, I got clean, I cleaned up, you know, quit killing my body. And a year later, I was pregnant and I was in love with my partner at the time. And so we had a baby and I was teaching dance and it was, you know, I was 24 years old. So I was looking back now, I'm like, that was so young. Oh my gosh, how did I do that? But and after about a year and a half of my daughter being in my life, she was just teaching me that there was something much greater, you know, and I took years prior, an extended vacation, my dad calls it, to New York City, where I met Dharma Mitra, one of my first teachers. And, you know, there was a love in his eye, like a twinkle in his eye that looked at me with such compassion and acceptance and unconditional love, and I wanted to share that with everyone. So that's really kind of where the journey of making yoga my, like, you know, the outline for my life began. So Tallulah, my daughter, was like 18 months old. I decided, yeah, I'll just open a yoga studio and, you know, start teaching yoga. And this was kind of before, like, the churning out of the teacher trainings. And so I had done lots of different teacher trainings, but I didn't, like, have a Yoga Alliance sticker, that's for sure. I didn't really know that you needed one of those, you know? And I'm still not really sure that you do. But anyhow, so I opened Lotus House of Yoga in 2010. There was a Chinese restaurant in Lincoln called House of Hunan, and it was like dirty and grimy, and like, I'm sure it's just like number one ingredient MSG. But I loved that like kitschiness. So I'm like, it has to be House of Yoga. And, you know, just the iconography of the lotus within our practice is just so right. I mean, it's used a lot, but there's a reason why. And the part that spoke to me the most was that as the lotus flower grows from the mud, it seeks the light, you know, and that I identified with. I feel that my whole life, I've always sought the light, no matter if I'm dealing with, you know, a season of depression or a season of mania or a season of apathy. It's like, always at when it's like that rock bottom, it's like, where's the light? Okay, there it is. Let's find another little patch of sunlight. Okay, here we go. And you know, that process takes a lot of work. It's easy to stay in the mud, in the depths. It's very simple, and I find myself still doing it sometimes, like, it's way easier to just be like, I'm stressed out. It's hard to expand yourself to a place where you are looking for that light and moving towards it. So Lotus House of Yoga is now in its sixth year. And we have five studios in Nebraska. We're opening another one in May. And I've got a juice bar or two. And I have a online clothing company called My Yoga Exchange, which I'm super fired up about. We take all those yoga clothes that are sitting in your closet, and we either resell them online or donate them to women in safe houses. Wow. So that they have clothes to wear, whether they want to wear them at their, on their yoga mat there, or, you know, maybe someday come to a yoga studio. So,
wow.
Yeah, life is exciting.
That's so exciting. There's so many things that I'm going to comment on. We'll talk about My Yoga Exchange towards the end. Wonderful. But I'm going to comment on when you first met Dharma Mitra and that twinkle that you saw in his eye.
Yeah.
When I first met you and I picked you up at the airport last year for Hanuman Festival, I just felt this like full embrace of a hug and love and eye-soul connection, and it. You're succeeding.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank I think you. That everyone that sees you, they see this twinkle in your eye and this this bright shine in your heart, and it is just so radiant and so bright. That's
Thank
so
you.
Amazing. Your upbringing sounds like a dream.
Yeah.
like a dream in a book.
It was. It really, really was. Yeah. My family is my number one priority. My, you know, parents went through a split up and they're in new relationships now, and it's so cool and beautiful. And so they're all really good friends. And I mean, my family is my everything. And, and they were certainly a part of that magic growing up.
That's so beautiful. That's beautiful. So you have this, I don't I'll call it a thing, but you have Vibe Tribe.
Yeah.
Tell us about Vibe Tribe. What's Vibe Tribe?
Vibe Tribe. Well, Vibe Tribe is really, so the, our sort of like tagline is, you know, feel the vibe, join the tribe. And in other words, everyone's invited to the party. You know, that's huge for me. When I was growing up, if I ever saw somebody being left out, it was like instantly I wanted to hug them and include them. And, you know, I think that comes a lot from me feeling excluded at times in my life. And, you know, when I was in elementary school, like, let me give you an example of maybe how weird I was. I was in fifth grade, and the gym teacher called the boys' team Bulldogs and the girls' team Poodles. And to me, that was like a huge strike against feminism. And so I launched a campaign in my elementary school. I handmade posters, put them up to end feminism in our physical education program. And so I started, you know, I would start little businesses or different things like that. And I think, you know, all women who are listening to this podcast can relate to Mean Girls. You know, there's like the sixth grade Mean Girls, and there's the eighth grade Mean Girls, and the high school Mean Girls. And after being, you know, put out and excluded enough times, you know, you start to conform. And you're like, I don't want to feel like I'm left out anymore. So, okay, I'll start like drinking and going out and, you know, like wearing the outfits and doing the thing. And I was just trying to slowly like kill the part of me that was weird, until I really went to New York and I was like, oh, it's cool to be weird. And the weirder you are, the more accepted. Oh, this is my scene, man. Like, here I am. Yes. And so when I came home from New York, I was like, I stepped off the plane and I had an awakening. And I was like, I will never apologize for who I am ever again. And you know, the yoga scene in general is very accepting. No matter who you are, you know, come to the yoga mat. But I'll be honest with you, I went to assist at a festival back in 2012, and I was kind of standing around some yoga teachers, people you know and love. And, you know, one of them was like, and what style of yoga do you teach? And I was like, love yoga. Like, it just came out, and I was like, And I could kind of see the women like roll their eyes a little bit and like, oh, okay, like that's not real. And in that moment, I was like, it is real and I'm going to make it real. And the people who are doing it are called the Vibe Tribe, you know, and no matter who you are, no matter what you come to the mat with, no matter what your body looks like, no matter what color your skin is, no matter what socioeconomic class you come from, no matter what you smell like, you are invited to the party, you know? And I'm not saying that, you know, life is a party 100% of the time, because you and I know that it's not. That's not sustainable. However, the Vibe Tribe is sort of a place where you can come to and it feels like a celebration of life. It's very inclusive, and I love, you know, looking out around our classrooms and, you know, when we all like hang out and or go out to dinner, and it's like every walk of life, you know, every age, every background, everyone's at the party, and nothing makes me happier, you know? Mm. So the Vibe Tribe is really founded on inclusivity and on celebration. And, you know, Yogi Bhajan says, first see the other as yourself. And I will say that in all of yoga, that's probably, even though I'm not a huge, you know, Kundalini practitioner, like that to me, I think is what can heal our world first and foremost. And, you know, that's a tenet of the Vibe Tribe. See the other as yourself first.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Mm-hmm. That's beautiful.
Yeah.
You have this belief of manifestation. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that for a moment. How does manifestation show up in your life, in your yoga practice, even in day-to-day walkings on the street?
Yeah. Oh, awesome. You know, it shows up in waves, manifestation. It's, you know, certainly a buzzword in our community, in our world right now, you know, and like, hell yeah, why not? Like, let's let trendiness be centered around something that's good, you know? I think what happens, the only unsustainable part of it is what happens is we begin to identify as the things we're manifesting. And then it's like your value gets placed in, oh, well, I need to manifest that. I need to manifest this. So, you know, Richard Freeman and Mary are, you know, my teachers as well, and they always help me see the space between my soul, my space, and what I've manifested in my life. Mm-hmm. So The fun stuff of manifesting is doing it from a place that serves the world. So I use the word God. I'm obsessed with God. I have a whole religion called the God Blob. And all my prayer every morning, thank you, God, for waking me up. And how can I serve you more today? Mm-hmm. What can I do to serve God more? Because God, to me, is that little spark of Narayana that's in each mm-hmm. of us, you know, that spark that we see. And so how can I serve my brother and my sister through my work on this planet today? So with that as the soil, when I plant those seeds, my hope and my prayer is that they're grown in the light of service. Mm. Okay, so for me, I have a lot of fun traveling. I have a lot of fun teaching. I have a lot of fun talking to big groups of people and raising the vibration. So manifesting Lotus House of Yoga into, you know, the almost 6 studio locations that it is right now, I don't see it as like a big, huge thing. It's like, oh yeah, it's just another place for us to all have fun together and like come together and love each other. Being able to teach yoga in Morocco and Spain and Turkey and Mexico, you know, those things to me are like fun. It's like, yeah, let's do it, you know? And so it comes from a place of, I know when I'm vibrating at my highest or when I'm like really in love with my life, I'm serving the world. And I continue to move forward with that as my intention and that as my motivation. And when you do that, things line up and they happen more quickly. I think with manifestation too, you have to get out of your own way. You know, one way that God humbles me is like, and why do you think you can do it by yourself? Like, that is my constant humble. I hear the voice of God, the voice of love saying like, why did you think again that by controlling everything and trying to figure out the outcomes, like you could do this all by yourself without like harnessing that just huge wave of energy that's ready to move through me whenever I like, you know, drop the mic and I'm like, okay, I'm not going to try and control this anymore. You know, it's like we get so attached to the outcome, to our expectation, that we let our expectation motivate our cause for action. And Bhagavad Gita says like, playa, you are not allowed those fruits. Okay. You do the work. You get to connect to the work and you can eat the fruit, but you're not entitled to them all, you know? And that keeps me humble. And I'll be coming out with a Bhagavad Gita ghetto translation. White girl appropriation rears its ugly head, but I will say it makes it a little more fun. So when I'm manifesting, I'm also really trying not to, you know, stay, it's to be attached to what happens at the end, you know, and really just let it move through me. I remember when I was like about 9 years old, and actually last weekend I visited this same site. I was on my family's land in Humboldt, Nebraska. And I walked off by myself and stood sort of on this ridge. And I remember stretching my arms out so wide. My fingertips were just like stretching from to the ends of the earth. And I just felt Vayu like go through me. And I remember standing in there thinking like, this is God. This is what God feels like. This wave of energy that's like permeating your entire physicality. It's surrounding you. It feels like unity. It feels like synchronicity, and it feels like love. And that was, I will say, like my first spiritual experience. My parents, when we were really young, we would go to Santa Fe a lot and we would spend time on the reservation. We would hike the, you know, adobe cliff dwellers and we'd look at petroglyphs. And, you know, that was very, very spiritual to me as well. But I think in the realm of manifestation, it's really like this state of needing nothing. Okay. And when you connect to that state of needing nothingness, then you get to like paint your own picture and you can say, okay, well, you know, I've really always wanted to put a yoga studio near the university so that kids can come and practice yoga. Kids who are like me, who maybe were partying for 4 days straight and they need a little bit of home, you know, mm-hmm. or the corporate dude who's, you know, in the office building and needs an hour of time to himself, you know, can walk downstairs and come to this new yoga studio. And that's how my manifestations are serving the world right now.
Wow. And it seems like your dharma has really shown itself mm-hmm. through the quality mm-hmm. of your manifestations that have shown up yeah. in your life. It's so beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, dharma, for me, I think, like, if for some reason I would find myself selling potatoes tomorrow, like, I would still be doing it with such love and such devotion and bhav that I know I'd be living my dharma out, you know? It's just that our bodies need to be unlocked through the asana. Everybody's does. And that's a really potent way then to connect in a heart-centered place. And that's yoga.
As you do, you know, continue to cultivate beautiful teachers in your studios and cultivate your own teaching practice, what do you find is the responsibility of the teacher?
Okay, what is the responsibility of the yoga teacher? First and foremost, all of the people that go through our teacher training, they know they are directed to practice yoga every single day, practice asana every day. Now, I say that knowing that probably like one day a week it's not going to happen, maybe 3 days it's a week. But if they know from me, their, you know, quote unquote teacher or leader at that time, like my prayer for you is that you get on your yoga mat every day. That's a huge responsibility. I think that if you as a yoga teacher are practicing, you will be offering your students quality. If you get to a place where, oh, well, I practice when I teach and I'm modeling the poses. It's like, no, that's not practicing. Practicing could be pigeon's pose on your right and your left leg for 4 minutes each side and like lay down. That's fine. That's a practice. But it's getting on your mat by yourself to the place where you are your own teacher. Then you you're never going to get burned out. If you're constantly going back to your yoga mat, you are so aware and in tune with your own needs that you can't overgive to your students. When you're constantly teaching all the time and not getting on your yoga mat, you know, that's where the burnout happens and that's where the quality lacks. So to be the consummate student is first and foremost a responsibility of yoga teachers. Second is, I think, using some sort of ancient scripture as your mirror. So whatever practice feels best to you, and hopefully for you it'll change every once in a while, but, you know, using something ancient as your mirror as a method of self-inquiry is paramount, because there is a reason that these teachings have survived for thousands of years, okay? And one of the coolest things to me is I'm like, my homie who wrote this, you know, 1,500 years ago was going through the same shit that you are. So, like, we are not that different as humans. We're dealing with the same stuff over and over. And that brings a sense of unity to the entire human experience that is revealed through these ancient scriptures. So for me, it's the Gita. You know, I go back to it over and over again. I resonate with the Bible. I resonate with Kabbalah. I resonate with, you know, the sutras. And I love to read. I've read my whole life. You know, my mom said she'd come in my room when I was a little girl. It'd be like 3 a.m. I'd have a flashlight under my bed covers and like trying to read Anne of Green Gables or something, or Chronicles of Narnia. But I think using an ancient scripture as a yoga teacher is a huge, huge way to develop a touchstone a mirror where you will be revealed things that you can then share with your students through your own filter. It's like, you know, on every time that I step onto my yoga mat this morning, Mysore, first thing I do is I thank my teachers. Mm-hmm. And then I thank their teachers, and I thank their teachers, and I thank their teachers, and all of a sudden, there's a party on my yoga mat because there is a lot of lineage back there of people who have sacrificed, you know, things that we'll never know in the name of this practice. And so that sense of history and unity is huge. To have a teacher that, like we were speaking about earlier, connects to your heart, that you see them as your teacher so humbly, is a huge responsibility for a quality yoga practice as well. And then I think finally, coming to meet your students in love. We live in a world where we're met with brick walls and we're met with boundaries and space all too often. So when you can simply meet another person in love, like connect at that heart space right away, it's huge. You know, this morning in Mysore, Ty, first thing he did was introduce himself, looked at me in the eye, shook my hand. And I was like, oh, you're nice too? Cool. Awesome. Okay. You know, and the yoga teachers who don't offer that first and foremost, I think have been hurt in a way. And that makes me sad for them. I don't think it drains your energy or hurts you in any way to meet your students in love. And so my wish for all of you quality yoga teachers is just show up in love for your students. Mm.
I would like to comment with a question on the ancient scripture and how we yoga teachers, it is perhaps of a great advantage to dive into these scriptures, just to self-study. Mm-hmm. But then how do we transmit some of this pretty challenging knowledge to like understand and fathom and like soak in to the communities that are a little bit intimidated by Eastern philosophy?
Yeah, perhaps. Absolutely. Okay, a few things. First, I want to be teaching this practice until I'm like 94, and I want to be practicing until I'm 108. So I'm in no rush. You know, these manuscripts have so much information. Like, you know, Gita, I can read one verse and it's like, okay, got to take a couple weeks on that one, you know? So I don't think there's any rush. And in a lot of yoga studios, including Lotus House of Yoga, sometimes it's like, oh my gosh, make sure they get to yoga, entice them to stay. You know, we want them practicing so we can keep our doors open. You know, there becomes this mentality of like, quick, hurry, get them the yoga drugs and then they'll stay, you know? And it's done out of love. It's done because we want our students to feel better, but it's also unnecessary. The yoga is going to work for itself, and it's to be offered in small doses. You don't have to, you know, share the entire document with your students in one class. So I think as yoga teachers, we have to take a little load off of our shoulders and know that you can just introduce one little thing at a time. Another aspect is speak it in your own way. You know, when I was like very, very young, my favorite song was Fight for Your Right to Party by the Beastie Boys. I grew up with this, like, you know, Beastie Boys, Madonna, New Wave, Elvis Costello, B-52s. Like, there was nothing musically that was off the table in our home. And that still informs me today. You know, I remember, like, the first rap music I started listening to in high school. And it was like, what is this? Oh, my gosh. And so, like, I can't deny that that doesn't inform the way that I share the Bhagavad Gita with my students, you know? Or like if I'm telling a story about Parvati and Shiva, I'm not going to offer it in a way that's like really dry and just the bare bones of the story. I'm going to say, like, and you know, like, Parvati just had a great dinner at the kitchen upstairs, and so she's feeling all, like, energized and ready to go meet Shiva. You know, I'm like, I try to find a way to incorporate our modern life or something that, you know, you can experience with me in the telling of this story. So don't, I used to honestly be afraid, like, well, what if Richard heard me tell the story like that? Like, I could never, and I've just really let that go over the years, because it's like, you know, the universe has brought me these students for a reason. They're sitting in front of me for a reason. And so I'm going to share with them the way that these ancient documents have moved through my system. You know, I'm just this little, like, filter, and there's a whole lot of light behind me, and I have an opportunity to share it with students. And so I'm going to do that in a way that feels authentic to me. And I don't know if you've noticed, but we're in no shortage of yoga teachers. We got a handful of them here in the United States of America. And so there's going to be something for everybody. So be true to yourself, share this knowledge in the way that it's moved through you and integrated through you. Don't be afraid to change your mind and share it with your students authentically. And then also, you know, there's this thing that happens where if I'll be seated with my teachers for a while, I'll go back to my students, and I never try to teach what I was taught right away. I did that like one time. Like, I went to Mati's intensive in Santa Monica, and I came home and I was like, okay, here we go. I'm going to teach everything that I learned this week. Oh my God. It was horrible. My students were like looking at me in class like, I'm never coming back to you. It was just like, so give yourself time to integrate things, whether you've been sitting with your teacher or you've just read, you know, sutras and it's just made a huge, profound impact. Let it integrate a little bit. And give yourself a little bit of space and time, even though you're going to feel like you're chomping at the bit to share it. You know, one thing that Mati says always is like, take two or three little things with you. You don't have to take the whole thing today. It's like, oh yeah. Okay, like, I don't have to, it's in my body somewhere, so, like, let in the front of my mind be two or three things that I'm taking away from, you know, my last time sitting with the Gita. Okay, I'm going to just take this away this time. I'm going to take this away this time, you know, because the Gita is always going to be there for me, and I can always come back to it. You know, that's one thing that I just, this yoga practice, Alec, it's so faithful. It's our most faithful companion. Yoga practice loves me unconditionally no matter how I show up to it, and it gives me time. So why do I feel like as a yoga teacher I'm like rushed for time to tell people things? You know, you got a lot of time. There's no need to rush.
I bow to you. Beautiful. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
MC, you are such a rock of a builder and community. You're just such a connection catalyst. And as you have created such a profound community at the Lotus House of Yoga, what are the keys to cultivating a kula, cultivating a sangha, like gathering community for our listeners who, you know, want to be able to draw in their tribe or start a yoga studio? What are the biggest keys to success?
Yeah. Ask questions of your fellow humans. You know, I mean, obviously we could have a whole podcast about our cell phones, but, you know, one of my rules that I don't speak out loud very often is like, if there's another human in the room, I don't have a cell phone in my face. I just think we are too much wealthy with information and life experience for the phone to take precedence from what's inside of you. Like, tell me about your favorite birthday party growing up. okay, well, whoa, like, where does that, okay, you know, and then you dig back in, or what are you really excited about doing today, you know, and asking questions of the people that surround you is, or when I started asking questions of the yoga students that would come to Lotus House of Yoga, it was like, you know, what did you do that was the funnest thing all weekend? And they'd be like, well, you know, my aunt was in town, and so we got to sit and, you know, we took a walk or we did this thing. And so then it was like 3 weeks later, I could look at the same student and go like, hey, how's your aunt doing? You know, tell me about Aunt Cindy. What's she up to? Or, hey, how's that new project you're working on going? You know, and when you take time to invest in other people's experience, that develops a relationship and a foundation for people to come back to. And I will tell you 100%, I'm not doing it inauthentically. I really want to know, Alec, what was your favorite birthday party coming up? You know, like, I want to know about the blue frosting that was such a big deal or whatever it was. And that makes me excited about life. So when I opened the yoga studio, just asking people questions was huge in building relationships. Number two, you know, the founding team of Lotus House of Yoga, Chaley, Laura, Dave, you know, we all hang out together all the time. So it was like we'd be hanging out after yoga class, just like sitting around and, you know, talking, or, hey, let's all go down to the sushi restaurant, or, oh, you guys, like, hey, there's this great concert, let's all meet there this weekend. We'd invite students, and, you know, much to the chagrin of some of my best friends, I'd be like, oh, yeah, and, you know, Leroy's coming too. And they'd be like, wait, who's that? I'm like, oh, he's like 75, he came to yoga class last week, like, da da, you know, and they kind of roll their eyes like, MC, come on, you know. But it's like, that's the thing, everybody's invited. I can't, that's like a deal breaker for me. And so developing a community of inclusivity means that no matter who you are, you're invited. Okay. And I can't tell you how many like times I've filled my car with gas or something and like gone into the gas station, handed a free week of yoga card to the gas station attendant. The DMV, I'm like slinging free yoga, making it rain. Like, I'm in the club. Like, give everyone more yoga. And that spirit of generosity is tangible. And when people come into Lotus House of Yoga, they feel it, you know. Also, just like inviting other yoga teachers from other yoga studios in, letting them practice for free, you know, is a huge way to build community too. Because I always wanted Lotus to be like your best friend's living room. Like, you come in, you're like, oh my gosh, what's up? I mean, so many times I see that face that's like, I don't know you, don't hug me, don't hug me, don't hug me. And I'm like, sorry, I got to, I can't help it. I'm like a magnet to your heart. It's like, go in and I hug. And, you know, it's a responsibility. And sometimes there are feelings of like, you know, like, I just want somebody to like take me in and hug me sometimes. Mm. But that's not my dharma. My dharma is to be like, you know, when you see somebody running a race and they're first across the line and they like bust through that, like, that, you know, finish line tape or whatever, like, I see my life as like a rainbow of finish line tape, and I'm just like constantly running into it. And I'm just like, keep going, you know. And thank God for the meditation practice, helps me just like sit obviously and be still. But the community at Lotus House of Yoga is just built on love, you know, and seeing everybody as yourself first. And when you do that and not have an expectation, you know, of like, oh, we want to build community, that's first and foremost. It's like, that's the expectation. What's the practice? What's the cause? What's your intention? It's just like, I just wanted to hang out with more people who wanted to practice yoga. And that will be made manifest, you know, without you having to quote unquote work so hard.
Do you teach meditation?
Yeah, Totally, I do. I totally teach meditation. There are a handful, like Laura McCarville is an incredible meditation teacher at Lotus House of Yoga. And she's like super fired up about that right now. So she's teaching a lot of those classes, but I love teaching meditation within the vinyasa practice. Mm. I call them pastachios. So, you know, I know, shout out to Dan Will for that, but, a pistachio, you have to like take time to like break open the shell and then you get to sit and like really enjoy that. Oh, pistachios, mouth watering. But within the flow, I like to see the flow as like sort of cracking open the shell. And then you like sit down, whether Virasana or in, you know, Sukhasana, and just like, okay, 60 seconds, close your eyes, we're breathing, you know. And at the end of practice, or sometimes even theming my classes just around, you know, you can't mess this up. You can't mess meditation up. And you have to stop being so hard on yourself that it's going to look or feel like a certain thing, you know. And I think that meditation for my students has been very clearly taught in private lessons. You know, when people seek me out for a private and they want to work on, you know, XYZ pose or they have an injury, I love teaching meditation in that setting. And it's a practice that I do every day. It's not 20 minutes every day, but I always sit. And my daughter and I sit before school, 8 a.m. every day for 5 minutes. And, you know, there's a certain sense of like wanting or expecting it to be something for her. But just knowing that I'm setting up a foundation for her is really the intention there. And I teach her class meditation every week, her whole grade, the whole second grade. I go into her school and, you know, just giving these little kids the tools to go like, hey, you know that instinct you have to love all your friends? That's right. Keep going there. Hey, you know when you get frustrated, instead of reacting in this way, like take 3 deep breaths. We talk about a triangle breath all the time, you know. And I think just taking the veil of it has to be a certain way off is a very illuminating for people. And is the most effective way to teach my students meditation.
I'm such a sucker for kids. And I love children so much. And I'm sure you feel the same way. But man, your daughter is so blessed to have you in her life. And I'm sure vice versa.
Absolutely. Yes. She's an incredible teacher. And, you know, I not through any of my own doing, but she's been able to keep those secrets, you know, revealed in her own heart. Like, I haven't, you know, and the world hasn't shut them down. So she's still a little girl. She still has amazing imagination. She comes to people in love. She's so compassionate. And it's like, that's just the generation that I want to raise.
Yes. So I'm going to shift gears a little bit and, like, pull a Hanuman and, like, get into your heart and like open the heart up. And I'm like looking in and just like through seeing like your upbringing and like where you are, there's like so much love. And I'm trying to look in there and I'm like, where did this like fancy for business come in? How did you get to maintain all this love and have just like, wow, some like gusto with with business? Because personally, business is a little bit daunting. And for others who are a little bit intimidated by numbers or you know, this and that, wow, how did that happen?
Okay, great question, and I would love to talk about it, because I remember one of the first times Yoshi and I had dinner together, the like main discussion we had was, this was a very long time ago.
Who's Yoshi?
Yoshi Aono is the director and founder of the Hanuman Festival. And he is, you know, just has created an incredible space. And we've been friends for a long time. And I'm extraordinarily grateful. You know, this is a tangent. I was modeling for a yoga clothing company in Utah, and I wanted to teach for the Hanuman Festival so bad. Alex, so bad. It was like no other festival. I didn't care. I just wanted to teach at Hanuman. And so I spent too much money that I didn't have at the time and rerouted my flight to come to Boulder on the way home. And I was like, hey, Yoshi, I'm going to be in Boulder. So, like, let's have dinner. And this was like a huge, like, cross your fingers, hope you can have dinner with him. And so we did, and we totally connected, and he looked at me, and he goes, you know what, MC, I don't have any more space at Hanuman Festival this year, but, you know, maybe next year. And I was a little heartbroken, but I thought, you know what, okay, next year's my year. Well, turns out, 2 months later, I was at my dad's house, and I get a call from him, and he's like, MC, we had a space open up. I've got one class for you to teach. Mic drop. Dead. Try to keep my composure. I'm like, okay, great, yeah. He's like, can you send me some class titles over? I'm like, absolutely, just like freaking out. We popped a bottle of champagne. I'm not kidding you. I was so excited. Okay, so my business acumen comes from very strong female leaders in my life. First and foremost, me and my mother. She is an artist at heart. She was an abstract painter when I was growing up and always was on her hustle, though. You know, we would just kind of be in tow with her, and she'd be going to art galleries and, you know, trying to get them to show her art. She always was teaching art to young kids and students, and she did a program where she took kids, at-risk kids who had been kicked out of their homes and on the streets, and did a public artwork with them, painted the inside of a parking garage that's still there today, happens to be directly next to one of our yoga studios, which is pretty freaking cool. But so I saw her like honor her art and honor her talents, but yet still be able to monetize that. Okay. And she was incredible barterer, but she would barter. She'd say like, well, let me do a painting for your space and my daughter can do dance lessons, or, you know, let me do a mural at the school and this and that, you know. So she really showed me that anything was possible in terms of business. And then the lieutenant governor of Nebraska was one of my mentors. The CEO of an incredible organization called Talent Plus was one of my mentors. And you know, one of those women told me, Mary Claire Sweet, never apologize for making money, because I had babysat for one of their kids and, you know, they gave me the check and I was like, oh, I'm sorry, thank you, you know. And in that moment, never apologize for making money, I was like so empowered, you know, like, oh, I don't have to be weird about this. It doesn't, you know, I demand that this is not the boundary of our relationship. There's so much more to a business relationship than just the money, you know? And I was formed with those ideals at a very important time before I opened Lotus House of Yoga. So I opened Lotus. I didn't know what a P&L was. That's a profit and loss sheet. I didn't know what a balance sheet was. I had never used Excel before. I was a marketing and advertising major in the time I went to college. So this was very foreign to me. And my uncle, Joe, he's my godfather. He gave me like a college education in business, basically the first year that Lotus was open, because I literally had no idea. I would go to like, you know, finance meetings with my accountants and leave in tears because I just felt so, I didn't understand it. But that's, you know, the practice is showing up and not know, okay, like Trikonasana, I still don't get it really. You know, it's like the hardest pose in the world, but being okay with not knowing. And I've always been an entrepreneur. I've always wanted to be a leader. So those, you know, I read years and years ago that a successful business owner has three things. They're, or two of three things, they're an entrepreneur, an expert technician, and a great manager. And I'm an entrepreneur, and, you know, I'm working to be an expert in our technical trade that we're doing here. I'm not a very good manager of people. You know, I would rather kind of say like, oh, you didn't get that done? Oh, I'll just pick up this. Let me just do it. You know, I don't want to bother you with this. And enter stage right, my mom, who after a couple years of Lotus being in existence, came in as our CEO. And we've always run Lotus like a business, you know, and that's been a very helpful anchor in a practice where you're taught to stay present with the wave, you know. So whatever the bank account looks like that day, like, you're present in it. Whatever, you know, the class numbers look like next week, you're present in it. And it's so tough. I mean, if you're listening to this and you have a yoga studio owner in your life, please go hug them and thank them, because the work that they're doing behind the scenes isn't as fun as doing triangle pose. I would much rather not look at a computer and do triangle pose, but that's part of my practice right now, is to, you know, stay on the forefront of my business acumen. Mm-hmm. I think business is developed on relationships first and foremost, and relationships are cyclical. So, you know, not quote unquote burning bridges is really important, and setting your expectations of a current business deal aside and knowing that, you know, things come in waves and it might come up later. You know, some of the property that Lotus House of Yoga is built on now, I've been looking at for years, and times where I thought that deal fell through or I didn't get that lease, well, now I have it, you know. And had I not kind of walked down the path of it a few times before, I wouldn't be where I am right now. So, you know, business is a very dynamic, multifaceted being. And as long as it's not put on some sort of pedestal as being higher than anything else, you know, I think we have the ability and the aptitude to navigate through those waters in any way we want as yogis.
Thanks for illuminating the business of yoga. And as you stay so rooted in how you hold yourself accountable, and you hold Lotus of the House of Lotus accountable, mm-hmm. you're traveling so much. Mm-hmm. And yeah. you travel across the world yeah. teaching yoga. How yeah. do you keep the thread so grounded while you're mm-hmm. miles away?
Yeah. Well, our teachers at Lotus House of Yoga are just insanely amazing. Mm. I mean, I can't take a poor yoga class there. Every single, I love surprising teachers. They hate it. You know, I went to like a 6 a.m. class last week, and I was just in tears at the end of the practice, because her offering, her confidence, her knowledge, her authenticity was so incredible that I was just like, stood up at the end of class and I looked at the students. I was like, we are so lucky. We are so lucky to have teachers so dedicated to their own practice and this practice of teaching here in Omaha, Nebraska, you know. And our studentship knows that, you know. They know that our teachers are amazing and they can't take a bad class. So, you know, the staff first and foremost, and the faculty first and foremost is huge, you know. Secondly, the community, people love seeing their yoga friends, you know. And so if I go away, it doesn't mean that, like, you know, Gregor and Lauren and Chaley aren't going to like go out after, you know, Friday yoga and have a glass of wine if I'm not there or not, you know. It runs its love ship without me, you know. And then finally, I think I'm a better leader when I travel. You know, I'm a better leader when I can go away and travel the world and come home. I'm more energized. I feel, you know, like even going back after this little trip to Colorado, it's like I'm going to go back and feel so much more excited about what we have going on in Nebraska than I did last week.
That's so beautiful. And where are you in 2016?
I'm at Hanuman Festival.
Yeah, we'll see you there. Yeah,
totally. And Steamboat Movement Festival, which is a gorgeous Yoga Festival in Steamboat Springs, Colorado. I'm going to be at a Phoenix Yoga Festival this summer. And I'll probably take my yoga exchange to a couple wanderlusts as well. We are thinking Dubai in the fall.
Wow.
Yeah, I really am kind of fascinated with going there. I felt called to go there. There's some connections I have over there that I'm excited to explore. We go to Mexico every year on retreat. That retreat is sold out already. It's in February of 2016. We go to Holbox Island. That's amazing. And, we do teacher trainings all over the country. So in April, I'm all over the Midwest every single weekend doing a different teacher training somewhere. So, yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
And can you tell us a little more about the my online yoga exchange?
Yes, myyogaexchange.com. So it's something I'm really passionate about because I love yoga clothes. I, wear them all day, every day. But what happened was I was looking in my closet and sort of disgusted. Like, I had a lot of yoga clothes in there that I wasn't wearing. And, companies send me free stuff and I'd go shopping. And so it just piled up and I was like, Mom, girl, I got all this stuff. Like, what? I need to give it away. I'm like, I wish that, I could give it to somebody that really actually needed it, And she was like, oh, I don't even want to show you my closet. It's so horrible. I've got bags and bags and bags and bags. And so she was like, what if we made the eBay of yoga clothes? And I was like, yes, this is amazing. And the ones we don't sell, let's donate them to women in need. So we had a program with the WCA in Omaha where we offered a sort of something. I can't really talk a lot about it because one of the primary tenets of women's shelters is secrecy, that they can come there and participate in things without their abuser knowing. And so we had developed a program with them where the women could come and, or men could come and practice yoga anonymously. So I'm like, let's give the abundant yoga clothes that we can't resell to the women's shelter. And so we started it. And I remember I told Gina Caputo about it and she was like, so fired up. And when she got fired up about it, I was like, okay, this is going to work. This is going to be great, And so last summer was kind of like our first full summer in business. And we went to tons of yoga festivals, some that I was teaching at, some that I wasn't. And we would just accept donations from our students in Omaha and Lincoln. And we gave them money to spend on our site. And then we would sell the yoga clothes. Okay. So we are like hustling all these yoga clothes that are basically never been worn. We have some stuff that is purchased from yoga studios. So for instance, if your home yoga studio is has this clearance rack, all these clothes are sitting there, you want to move that out, And so we'll buy that from you and we sell that online. So myyogaexchange.com is a place where somebody who like me in college, I couldn't afford $100 yoga pants. No way. That just wasn't in my experience. But I could go, if this site would have been there, go online, get a pair of, Lululemon yoga pants for $15 that somebody had worn one time. Yes, please. Thank you. So my yoga exchange is really fun. We do these things now where we'll come into your studio for a week, accept donations for a week. I teach a couple yoga classes. We have a big party. It's just that's kind of fuck the system up. Let's find where we are hoarding parigraha, and how we can share and keep moving that energy into the hands of those in need.
That's amazing.
It is amazing.
It's wow.
Really, yeah.
That's so beautiful. Mm-hmm. We will definitely have links to this website the podcast and we're definitely looking to promote this and share the abundance of yoga clothes.
Totally.
Nice.
Because there is.
There is.
Yeah, totally.
Wow. So just a few more questions. What defines a yoga practitioner?
Okay. What defines a yoga practitioner? A yoga practitioner is someone who has a depth of understanding and a depth of awareness on their needs and their offerings every day. So where is it that I need to show up and meet myself a little bit with more love? And where can I then share that love with more people? That unfolds for me on in a daily yoga practice. I have to be on my mat every day. If I'm not, it's very apparent in my relationships, in my attitude about life in general. A yoga practitioner is someone with a depth of awareness of their priorities. Okay, so my priority is relationship with others, and I want to know about you, and I want to know where you're at, and how you're feeling today, and where you want to go tomorrow, because I'm aware of that in myself. I'm aware of where I'm at today, how I'm feeling today, where I can share more abundance, and where I want to go tomorrow. And that depth of meeting yourself, of self-inquiry, is, I think, at the center of who a yoga practitioner is. It's remembering that you're whole. It's a myth that you're not okay or that you don't have everything you need. And when you're meeting yourself in that depth of understanding, you know and you remember. And then you see that in others, you know, and that's unconditional love. It's just knowing that exactly who's sitting in front of you right now is who's perfect to be sitting with you. Yoga practitioner is dedicated and devoted, like you shared with me this morning. And a yoga practitioner is someone who is both birds, right? So I think that's Upanishads, where one bird is sitting at the start of the limb, observing the bird at the end of the limb, eating the fruit, both sour and sweet. And so the yoga practitioner recognizes both birds as a part of the human experience.
Cool. Cool end note. One last question.
Yes.
What would be a golden nugget that you would offer to our listeners, practitioners, teachers, anyone who's listening as they carry on the path of life?
Yeah. Love your inner spark. Okay, so there is something that, you know, the two like flint rocks of your mother and your father came together and, you know, they sparked in a way to create you. And that spark is special for you and it's special to you. And the more you can love that spark with revolutionary acceptance, I mean, exactly who you are and where you are right now, that will soften you to a point where you can move forward in a way that's authentic, you know? And one of my favorite things to say to my best friends is, I love every single part of you, because that's what I say to myself. You know, I think in some way, and this is a little bit of a, you know, it can drive you crazy a little bit, but I think we're all really just talking to ourselves, you know, like no matter what it is, we're just sort of projecting this inner dialogue we've had. And it's very like much an oversimplification of life, but it's kind of true. So if you start with yourself and you develop a deep and loving relationship with yourself, that's going to spill over into your relationships with everyone who you meet, whether it's one of your favorite friends sitting across from you right now, or someone at the DMV, your grandmother, or your child.
And my last question, it's not so very much yoga related. It's a question that I love to ask everyone.
Wonderful.
What's your favorite color?
Yellow. Totally. Always has been. Always will be.
Sweet.
Yellow. I love yellow. Yellow's my fave.
Bright like the sun. Exactly. MC, thank you so much for taking time while you're here in Boulder to connect with me and to share with us the Yoga Revealed podcast as you find yoga in your life.
Thank you, Alex.
Thank you so much. We'll see you at Hanuman Festival.
Okay, I'll see you then.
Namaste.
Namaste.
If you're feeling like you've got to connect with MC Sweet after she has revealed so many gems on how to live life, visit lotushouseofyoga.com and check out their teacher trainings to receive a special discount off their 200 and 300 hour teacher training programs. dive into the passion that is offering yoga and sharing what you love. Yoga Revealed is a proud partner with Hanuman Festival. Join MC Sweet in this conscious community that holds transformational experiences and is created to raise the vibration. Hanuman Festival 2016 is in Boulder, Colorado, June 9th to the 12th. Thank you for tuning into this episode of the Yoga Revealed podcast. Tap into your inner light warrior and share what you find with the world, forever being a living thread of yoga and the Vibe Tribe. This is Alec, and I truly thank you. Live your truth and love your life. Until next time, keep practicing and all is coming. Namaste.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.